This is exciting because I'm in front of a construction site. It's home to 55 seniors. They're going to move in early spring next year. We're building it, and Wickwean Community Center, a very well-known, very good social service agency, is going to come and operate it. These seniors that are going to be here will get comprehensive support, whether they need mental health or any other kind of services. So, yay!
I'm Frank Vaughn. It is May 23rd, 2025, and I just want to translate that for you, for those of you who don't know. And if you don't know, thank God that you don't know. I'm about to take something away from you. That's Olivia Chow. She is the mayor of Toronto, and she is proud that they're going to be shoving seniors who have worked their entire lives in this country into CCAN homes. This is the future. This is the future that Mark Carney promises this country when he talks about building a 500,000 homes a year. He's talking about CCANs, but dare I say, you'll be lucky if it's a CCAN. Because we're on the way to Hong Kong-style apartments, if you can even call them that. Little 8x8, 8x10 rooms, if they're even that. Coffin homes that people have to live in there. This is the future under these people, and I just want to highlight. Olivia Chow isn't going to be living like plebs. The plebs that she is, yay, talking about saving. Mark Carney isn't going to be living like plebs. None of the MPs, none of the MLAs, none of the people who are making these decisions on your behalf about your future are ever going to live like you. This relates very closely to something that got glossed over in yesterday's video because I waxed poetic about Canada Post for far too long, focusing on a symptom, not so much the problem. This is the housing minister says unaffordable homes are the answer. Now, CCAN homes are probably affordable. Maybe not in Canada. It remains to be seen how affordable they are. CCAN homes are a luxury item in Hong Kong. Coffin apartments are barely affordable for the poorest people who live there. So that's an indicator of the future. But we have to understand, I was going to read some of the article, but we don't even need to. The Liberals were elected by people who are 65 years and older, majoritively. There were people who were younger who voted for them, but most of those people voted for other parties. They voted for an actual future. The baby boomers are voting for the past. They're voting for a Canada that they remember. They're voting for their benefits. They're voting for healthcare. They're voting for things that are important to them, and to hell with the younger generations. Now, I understand, before everybody gets upset, I got a lot of older viewers. You people are full of wisdom. And I've always said, you got to respect your elders. But there is a huge cohort, a huge segment of that population that is not voting forward. They're voting backwards. Now, in order to retain that support, the Liberals are stuck in a position. They cannot afford to have real estate prices collapse because a lot of those seniors are planning on cashing out their real estate so that they can afford retirement into one of those CCAN homes. If they see the value of their real estate in decline, they're going to panic and the Liberals will lose one of their principal props. Now, the Liberals, in spite of all the judicial reviews and finagling and all the crooked shenanigans that have been going on at Elections Canada, they're one seat shy of a majority. And, of course, they're going to have to nominate a speaker. So they basically have to come up with two people. And those two people have to accept. So they got to get one floor crosser out of the NDP, given the fact that the NDP has done nothing for 4 years except prop up the Liberal government. I mean, that's all they've done. And even those NDP members who just got elected are part of the problem. Now, they may rediscover their spine. They may be able to regrow some sense of self-worth. But I doubt it. I doubt it very much. They're in a very weakened position. I'd like to see the story arc where they improve and they start opposing everything. But I don't know. The Liberals have only got to convince one to come over, and then they can ship Elizabeth May into the speakership. That'll be the crowning achievement of her career, and we can move on with a majority government for the next 4 years, which is what I think they would like to do without doing too much negotiating finagling. But back to the point, if we do end up back in an election in a year or two, which might be a fear for the Liberal Party, they have got to maintain their base of boomers. And how they maintain that base of boomers is by promising them that their real estate values will not decline. But there's a problem there. We have seen on this channel the weakness in the real estate market, which is showing up already. People selling hundreds of thousands of dollars under what they paid for just a few years ago in those big markets where a lot of those seniors live who are planning to cash out. Inventory is growing all across the metro regions of Canada, and it's not long. The media is flying a bit of cover, and we'll look at that. Is Canada headed towards a recession in 2025? When the Liberals are in office, they call it an economic slowdown. When the Conservatives are in office, it's a nightmare crisis. The fact is, unemployment is creeping up, and it's not just unemployment. This is something I wanted to get into in its own video, but I'm going to touch on it here. There's also labor market participation, which is now, it's in the mid 60%. So 30-odd percent of people aren't even participating in the labor market. So the unemployment numbers are ineffective at identifying how many people that can work are working. A lot of that 35% is going to be sitting on welfare, social assistance of some kind. So yeah, you take that rate off the top. But there's a lot of people who have just given up. What's the point of working for your $15 an hour minimum wage when you can't afford to live at all? It's Canada's got a problem. And capital inflows, as I've showed as well, are drying up. People are not investing in Canada because we are risky. Our credit rating is getting downgraded. Our government is heavily in debt. Mark Carney doesn't even have a plan. He doesn't have a plan to halt the rise in our national debt. He doesn't even have a plan to table a budget until maybe the fall. Contrary to popular belief, he doesn't have to. And he knows that because Justin Trudeau proved that. We can rule this country. We can enforce its existing laws. We can reinterpret the existing law without a parliamentary vote. You just got to go to the Governor General and get a signature. And who appoints the Governor General? The Liberal Party. Outstanding, isn't it? Bringing it back to the point. You have an environment where the price of staples is unequivocally rising. There is no deflationary move downwards for the things that you need to just survive. Rents are going up. Food prices are going up. Gas has taken a little bit of a reprieve. We've had the inflation statistics come out, which have highlighted that the removal of the carbon tax actually led to a net decline in inflation after all the time that the left spent telling you that the carbon tax was not net inflationary. They turn around and admit that it was inflationary. Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives were right the entire time, and they were demonized in the media, and the media doesn't even pause for a moment's reflection to look back in the rearview mirror and say, hey, maybe we got it wrong. Another symbol of that is Andrew Cohen, whose tweets and his product has become about, we got fooled by Mark Carney. It's just more of the same. Ooh, who would have known? Whoopsie doesn't count. When there were thousands of us trying to tell the story in different ways, and Andrew Cohen had nothing but invective for all of us. But to bring it all back around to the beginning, the Liberals are stuck between a rock and a hard place. They campaigned on a promise to make housing more affordable, but they can't afford to allow housing to become more affordable because if it does, the underlying value of the real estate assets of their base will fall and the retirement of millions of baby boomers will be at risk. So what are they going to do? If they print their way out of this, affordability gets even worse for the working people, not the retirees. And the value of your savings evaporates anyway. So say you have $500,000 or $1 million in equity in your house. If the government goes into quantitative easing, which I don't think is even on the table, I don't think printing is going to be on the table this time, not at scale. The scale that they would need to print to, I struggle with stave off the crisis because it's not staving anything off. It will exacerbate things, but visually speaking, they might be able to pump out a bunch of statistics which convey the message that a bunch of people who can't afford to do anything actually are getting richer, because that's what the Liberal government does. They insist you're getting richer while you've been getting poorer this entire time. I don't think they can stop the bubble from bursting. And believe it or not, the housing market is in a bubble. It's driven by money laundering. It's driven by record immigration. It's driven by a lot of factors. But underlying it all, if the promise, if the hope of Canada loses its luster and its allure, not just for new immigrants, but for moneyed people who might invest and build here, then you can't stop the bubble from bursting regardless of how short-supplied you are in housing. There's a world where, like I said yesterday, where real estate values decline as the price of everything else keeps getting higher and the purchasing power of your dollar disappears. That's the world Mark Carney's leading us into. That's the world the Olivia Chows are leading us into. And once again, I just have to remind you, they're never going to miss a meal. They're never going to be late on a bill. They don't have to face the struggles that the people that they're virtue signaling to ever have to face. But they do face this dilemma. But back to this quote-unquote CTV news article, is Canada headed towards a recession in 2025? They're asking the right question. But again, down here, U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs have upended international trade and pushed up prices. Those tariffs haven't even really set in yet. They've been postponed and postponed and postponed. They're not even on the table right now. Mark Carney went down there, kissed the ring. All the talk of 51st state is off of Trump's lips. His ambassador says that that phase of the operation is over. We're going to enter into a trade negotiation. This isn't even factoring into prices in Canada right now. But even if Canada is able to come to a quick agreement with the U.S. on a trade deal, the uncertainty created by Trump could still linger. Created by Trump. The framing of this is pure propaganda. It's the Liberal Party who has led this country for 10 years. They have allowed the housing bubble to materialize. They have allowed the country to be overrun by drug traffickers and terrorists, money laundering through our real estate system. They have overrun the country with immigrants, many of whom don't speak the language, don't share our values, are being subsidized by taxpayers even though they've never paid a dime, 1.6 million of which are disabled and entitled to benefits. It's the Liberals who have created every single crisis, but they have successfully, through their vehicles of propaganda, which is state-supported, you have to remember that. Every time you look at CTV News, they're all getting funding from the federal government these days. Journalism directly is getting subsidized, so it is no longer journalism. Anything the state funds becomes dominated by the state, and we're only getting started on that file. Trump did not create the problems in Canada. He's just a scapegoat that the media is only too happy to use on behalf of their masters, the Liberal government. The impact of tariff uncertainty on investment is going to depress economic activity going forward, even if we manage to design a new agreement, because we don't know how long that agreement is going to last. That's a factor, but it's way down the list. Canada has a prohibitive tax structure. Canada has a prohibitive carbon tax. Even though it's suspended, it's not actually gone. The industrial side is still there. No one wants to put money into Canada. But tens of trillions of dollars are being guaranteed for investment in the United States because the Americans are going to reward people for bringing their capital home, just like they did in the first Trump term. But now, if the first Trump term was first gear, the second Trump term is going to be gears four and five, overdrive. It's just going to happen so fast. It's going to happen at such an accelerated rate. And the capital that could have come to Canada is not coming here. And the capital that's already here is going to flee to the United States because doing business in Canada sucks. We talked yesterday about Canada Post and how prohibitively expensive it is to ship with Canada Post. Again, a very small problem, very far down the list of the reasons why nobody wants to spend here, nobody wants to hire here, and fewer people by the day are going to want to live here. So they can try and immigrate their way out of this crisis. But if you're bringing independence, that only exacerbates the crisis. If the people with money no longer want to come here because it's not a safe haven for their capital and they have more inviting locations to invest in, that source of propping up the economy dries up. None of which has anything to do with a trade agreement with the United States. Again, this article, what is it even doing? TD Bank chief economist Beata Kurancy recently warned that tariffs are driving Canada toward a recession in 2025, which could lead to approximately 100,000 job losses. According to the latest StatsCan data, the unemployment rate continued to rise in April to 6.9%, which represents roughly 1.5 million people. Again, labor market participation. That's a more important statistic, but of course CTV doesn't put it in here. And they're talking about 100,000 job losses and they're blaming it on tariffs and Trump. Tariffs that Canada assesses to the United States means that Canada pays more money for goods that we import. It's the Canadian side tariffs, if they do come down, which will cost you the most money. The American side tariffs are reciprocal. There were punitive tariffs, but if we're actually successful in cleaning up our border and dealing with the fentanyl problem here in Canada, the punitive side disappears and all we have is reciprocal. Again, it's I struggle because we're trying to get the right framing here. We're trying to get people to understand that nothing wrong with Canada is as a result of Donald Trump, yet we just went through an electoral cycle which shows you how ineffective the truth actually is against the big red machine and the propaganda. I mean, even the Conservative Party, rather than fight this or come up with a different message, they bowed to the big red machine's labeling and they shoehorned themselves into Team Canada. And yes, they delivered the biggest election result the CPC has ever seen. And I continue to believe that if they can start to operate outside the talking points, if they can get, and I'm losing my faith that they're actually going to be able to do that, because ever since the election, all Pierre's been doing is talking points, Nerf ball stuff, safe. He's not talking about any of this stuff because he's afraid to talk about the fact that Canada's broken. We have to tell the truth if we're going to fix the problem. Canada is busted out. The second last video I did carried that in the title because that's what's happening. This is like we're in receivership. We're in arbitration. Mark Carney's the master of our descent and decline, and they have no plan to right the ship. Canada's in a bad way. It has nothing to do with Trump. According to TD's forecast, Canada's GDP will shrink by 1% in the second quarter of 2025 and 0.2% in the third quarter. BMO puts the decline at 1%. National Bank puts it at 1.1. Blah, 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 blah. 1%. Sounds so small, right? Just like that 1% tax cut that Mark Carney did, congratulating himself. Maybe the one bit of legislation they might get passed before they go on holiday. Fully expensed and fully paid. Justin Trudeau has got a gold-plated pension for the rest of his life, both as an MP, I think it's $147,000, and then as Prime Minister, he gets another $73,000. He'll get like $8 million. As a payout. Plus, he gets a severance package. The man who the Liberal Party propped up, who the NDP propped up, the man who did the most to destroy this country, is going to sail off in the sunset with a big bag of money. But, I mean, you can draw some small comfort while you're living in your sea can, eating dog food, that the value of his money is in decline too. I would bet my bottom dollar that these GDP forecasts are they're too optimistic. We're going to overshoot these to the downside, and it doesn't matter how much money printing the government does or how many social programs or how much UBI, because underlying it all, you have to make things. You have to produce things. And some of the only things that Canada produces that are still worth money are natural resources. Potash, oil, gas. And what are some of the things that Mark Carney campaigned on leaving in the ground? Oil, gas, and to a lesser extent, potash. They want the money, but they don't want to let us do the work of making the money. You have to understand that if you don't make things, your money isn't worth anything. Money is debt. That's what people don't understand about money. A lot of people, anyway. I'm sure a lot of people who are watching this understand it just fine. The money in your pocket isn't value. It's not a thing. It's a unit of exchange, but it's created out of nothing. It's a lack of wealth, not wealth itself. Now, I know people might say, I would rather have $100,000 than have $0. So would anybody else. But at the end of the day, a far more valuable thing to have would be a home or a car or tools that you can go and make things with so that you can trade those things for money, which you'll have to pay your bills, but it's just a unit of exchange. Savings aren't really all that great. Your bank offering you a GIC at whatever the hell it is right now, what is it, 4 or 5%? I don't even look anymore. I used to look just so I could understand it, but what's the point? Why are you sticking your money there? Inflation's robbing you. Taxes are robbing you. They're going to rob your equity through taxing basically unrealized capital gains on the excess value of your house. Like, everything's on the table. They could be taxing your investments before you even make money. So, well, what's the point of hanging on to money? What you need are things that you can do things with. You need things that you can build things with. Money is a lack of value. Money is a lack of wealth. And once again, that's probably not going to land very well, but that's the truth of it. And it doesn't matter how much of it they create, because value comes from the underlying things that you make and you build. Now, I watch the internal politics of most nations in the Western world, and one of the nations that doesn't get any attention is little Belgium. Now, you'd think Belgium would get a little more attention because Brussels is in Belgium, and what else is in Brussels but the headquarters of the European Union. And why this is relevant to Canada, even though it's an ocean away, is because we're sending hundreds of millions of dollars to Ukraine, and our prime minister is basically a European import. He spent most of his time in Europe, identifying as an Irishman, identifying as a European. Now all of a sudden he's a Canadian again. Bravo, Canada, for accepting that narrative. But at any rate, he's also talking about aligning us and our defense policies with the EU. And there's been chatter in the mainstream media about Canada joining the EU, which is one of the most foolish things and anti-democratic things I've ever heard in my life. Fleeing from the United States into the arms of Europe? Most of the people who advocate for this really are just saying they don't like how Donald Trump looks. They don't like the spray tan. They don't like the hair. They don't like the accent. They don't like the braggadocious nature of Donald Trump. They're not thinking at all. They're not looking at the Republican system of the United States and comparing and contrasting it with the EU and realizing that American citizens are far better off than European citizens in terms of personal freedom and human rights. And somebody, inevitably, in the comment section, will link to some statistical compilation coming out of some university which will claim the exact opposite. Statistics are manipulative. You can manipulate them any way you want. I read constitutions. The EU sucks, and that's where I'll leave it. But all across Europe, on the channel, we've talked about how national rally in France is being actively repressed by the government and by the bureaucracy, that Marine Le Pen has been barred from running for president again, that all the other leftist parties have united and said they will never work with National Rally. The same thing is happening in Germany with AfD polling. The last poll I seen had them, they're the biggest party in Germany, according to the poll. They're the second biggest now, according to elections. But all the other parties have said they will never work with the AfD. No way. Germany's not allowed to have character. France is not allowed to have character. You must convert into an androgynous mass immigration mass of nothing. That's the only choice that you're getting. Romania, we've just gone through a whole series of shenanigans there, which is still ongoing, where the right and the anti-EU forces are being denied democratic process. But the same thing is happening in little Belgium. I'm just going to read this. This morning, the Belgian regime police tore the whole city government of Nineveh out of their beds and arrested them. Their crime? The city of Nineveh recently became the first ever city to be governed by Vlaams Belang, by absolute majority. Vlaams Belang is the biggest opposition party in the country and poses a threat to the Belgian regime. On the federal level, there is a cordon sanitaire, just like in France, just like in Germany, an anti-democratic agreement by the other parties never to work with Vlaams Belang. But on a local level, VB got to power for the first time ever thanks to an absolute majority in the city of Nineveh, a city close to Brussels, ravaged by mass unvetted immigration. The regime now arrested all of the local VB people and accused them of election fraud. Where have we heard this story before but every other nation in Europe? And I include Canada in that. Because this whole farce that we just went through, this whole farcical thing, this election, which the Conservative Party seems to be afraid to talk about in the terms that needs to be talked about, is an adjunct, is an annex of what's happening in Europe. It's an extension. It's a ridiculous claim, but they're not just doing this to keep VB from power. They're doing this as a warning to everyone. If you participate in elections and try to keep us from power, we'll ruin you. This is how democracy works in the heart of the EU. Every single nation is oppressing anybody with different ideas. You're only allowed one. Like it's like you have a range of operation. Within that range, you can argue. It's like the decision is made that you're going to build a bunch of government housing. Okay? So you get to argue about how much and how you build it. You don't get to say, I don't want to do that. It's just like the whole climate change debate. You don't get to present evidence that the sun is doing it or that Cosmic radiation is doing it. You don't get to present evidence that it's not happening. You only get to decide, yes, it's happening. How fast is it happening? That's the only question that's on the table. Everything else is barred. This is a theme. And right now in Canada, we enjoy a degree of free speech. It's not really free, but we better make use of it while we can, and we better get active provincially so that maybe our premiers will protect us, because the federal government's going to come for that too. Mark Carney supports the European model, and the European model should horrify anybody that learns about it. And since we're talking about mass immigration and how people are waking up to how it's ruining everything everywhere it's tried, we have to talk about Canada. This is from yesterday. Treated him like a piece of garbage. Two men faced deportation after knowingly dragging pedestrian under car. They don't mention in the headline. This bothers me. The framing of headlines bothers me. They killed the guy. Now, they're going to tell you about how they killed the guy in the article, but it's not mentioned in the headline. And the key thing is not murder, it's deportation, and that they face it. Provincial court in Surrey heard that Gaganpreet Singh, where have we heard that name before? Gaganpreet, name of the guy who ran all by himself, apparently, because as far as I know, as of right now, no one else has been charged. The biggest mega lab in the country producing death for the domestic market and for export to the United States. One dude been charged. His name was Gaganpreet too. Gaganpreet Singh and Jagdeep Singh, who are now also facing deportation again, deportation is the issue, for their actions, are being described by the victim's family as unimaginably cruel. The pair pleaded guilty to a number of offenses, including failing to stop after an accident and interference with a dead body. The guy who was killed. On January, this is just, it's heartbreaking to me. A 45-year-old father and husband, being identified as JG, at the family's request, was lying on the road when he was struck by a Ford Mustang. Provincial court in Surrey heard that Gaganpreet was driving the car, which stopped briefly after the collision. Gaganpreet, along with a passenger, Jagdeep, got out of the car. During a 911 recording played in court, a witness calls out to the men, "There's a man underneath your car." Despite this, the vehicle speeds off, dragging JG for 1.3 kilometers. They then stop in a cul-de-sac where they work together to dislodge the victim from the car. The nature of how he died was so violent. This is the poor widow. He was so severely injured, we were not able to view the body. Later on, we're told by Gaganpreet that he's very sorry, under the advice of his lawyer. "I say sorry to the victim's family." Is that why you didn't stop when you hit the man? Is that why you worked tirelessly to get him dislodged from your car so that you could drive away because you were sorry? And they include in the article, mercilessly, tastelessly, classlessly, heartlessly, that he says, "I've been under stress since this accident happened." Poor Jagdeep, poor Gaganpreet. To hell with the victim. Not all cultures are created equally. Not all people grow up in the kind of society that we live in. I question every single day. I read these books to my kids. My wife reads these books to the kids, where we talk about values. We talk about the importance of not lying. We talk about the importance of maintaining trust. We talk about the importance of not being a rat over every little thing that happens. The importance of picking up your room, being polite, obeying the laws, and having some decorum. I teach my kids how to be good Western citizens. And they're going to go, and it's my son's sixth birthday today. And you protect your kids, but time marches on, and eventually they're going to face this world. And they're going to learn, and I'm going to teach them before they get there. They're going to be prepared that some, maybe half, maybe most of the people in this world are not raised the way that I'm raising them. That's going to pose some disadvantages to them, but I have to convey the importance of living a moral life and holding to these codes of conduct anyway, because that's what made Western civilization so great, the best civilization that the world has ever created, something we should all take pride in. Instead, we are shamed. We built the modern world. It's ours. Sorry if I'm getting a little heated. I want to keep it. So I cling to the hope that these value systems that we created, and it's not to say that it doesn't go wrong. There's always been crime, folks. But social enforcement used to keep these things in check. They used to be rarer. There are civilizations in this world where human life is not valued, where being polite and nice to your neighbor is actually viewed as a form of weakness to be exploited. They have no concept of the books that I read my kids and the values that I'm trying to impart on them, because they weren't raised with them. They don't have them. There's cultures where stealing from anybody but your family is looked upon positively. There are cultures who believe that if you don't share the same religion as them, you're easy pickings. They can lie to you. They can maim you. They can abuse you sexually, and there's no consequences. There's people who believe this. You can go on YouTube right now and you can watch videos. People getting run over in the streets of China, and life just keeps going on because a human life doesn't have the same value. You can find the same thing in India. The caste system, in spite of government efforts, still exists. The untouchables still exist. There's no untouchable class in Canada. There's no untouchable class in the Western civilization. We believe, at least theoretically, that all are created equally. Now, if you dump millions of people with incompatible cultural values, you don't even demand that they speak the language, you don't demand that they know the history, and you don't demand that they demonstrate that they can abide by the law and obey the cultural norms. And this isn't going to be all of them. Many of those people are trying to escape. That's a good thing. We want those people who want to be part of what we've got. But the people who don't leave their issues behind at the door should see a closed door. They should be kept out. Because we're in the middle of losing it. The very beautiful, valuable, best the world has ever done, Western civilization. Giving it away to the profane. Giving it away to people who don't even see it as valuable. They just see it as a cash cow to be manipulated to their advantage and to be taken advantage of. And anybody who's got a voice that wants to highlight these problems, it's a sad, tragic truth. We're being actively repressed. We're being actively opposed. The only bulwark that any of us have right now, the only chance that we have, is the fact that the U.S. administration under Donald Trump exists at all. Absent that, we're just losing. And believe me, when we lose to these other forces, these other cultures, these other nations who are turning us into resource colonies, when we lose forever. They will not be nice to us. They will not be kind to us for what we have bestowed upon them and what they have inherited because of our weakness. If anything, they'll punish us even harder. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.